Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, our weekly radio magazine of the performing arts here on KLW. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with conductor, composer, and fellow flutist Martha Stoddard, who will be joined by assistant conductor Jason Ostensted, about to share details about their upcoming concert program on American soil with the Oakland Civic Orchestra this Sunday. Also, a conversation with actor Jason Stojanovski, who stars as an injured athlete in the play Colossal, opening next week at San Francisco Playhouse. We'll also hear about the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts production of the musical Cabaret. The principal of the school, Brian Kern, was to be here. He's also the musical director of the show, but being a principal, he's been called away. We do have two of the principals of the production, though, Lucy Murphy and Ryan Doyle. And regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, reflects on the end of the Abbey in Downton and offers a few cultural diversions. Stay with us. One of the East Bay's cultural treasures comes from a volunteer community orchestra that has been bringing together musicians of all ages and backgrounds since 1992. The Oakland Civic Orchestra is funded by the City of Oakland Office of Parks and Recreation, as well as by the members themselves. Since 1997, the group's artistic direction has come from another local treasure, conductor, composer, educator, and fellow flutist Martha Stoddard, someone who is deeply involved in the San Francisco Bay Area music scene. She is director of instrumental music at Lick Wilmerding High School and past director of the John Adams Young Composer Program at the Crowden School. Her music has been performed around the world and includes recent commissions from the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble, the Sierra Ensemble, and the San Francisco Wind Festival. Her work, Gate Changes, will be featured on this Sunday's concert of the Oakland Civic Orchestra, which has as its theme On American Soil. Martha, welcome to Open Air.
Oh, thank you.
Great Such a to pleasure here. To finally have you on the air. It's your music, I should mention, points of relevance that we're listening
reference.
To. Reference. Points of reference that I'm rudely talking over at the moment. Also on the program, Antonin Dvorak's Ninth Symphony, From the New World, and Samuel Barber's first essay for orchestra, which will be conducted by the Minneapolis-born assistant conductor of the Oakland Civic Orchestra, Jason Ostensted, who also joins me in studio. He's been playing the piano since the age of 9 and has traveled and studied throughout Europe and wrote his doctoral thesis on narrative theory in Mahler's Third Symphony, a page-turner, I'm sure. In addition to his work with the Oakland Civic Orchestra, Jason has worked with the St. Louis City and Winter Opera. Welcome to you, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Pleasure to have you both on. Well, Martha, let's start with you. It's been a while since we crossed paths, and that's in a musical way, and that's thanks to John Kendall Bailey, who
right.
brought us together. That was quite a concert, wasn't it?
It was. John has an undying love of Bernard Herrmann, which he infused into all of us, I think.
And that was the music from a Twilight Zone episode
right.
called
that's
Little
right.
Girl
Lost.
Well, Little Girl Lost.
Right, I remember.
It was
that.
Really something. It had four bass flutes, four harps. And was it four viola da gamba?
Da gambi? It's too hard to remember.
it was just an amazing sound, though, what Herrmann yeah. did with those yeah. those instruments and
yes.
a number of them in combination. Absolutely wonderful. Well, let's start with your work that's on this program this coming Sunday, Gate Changes, which to the ear may invoke an airport annoyance, but in print is actually Gate, G-A-I-T, Changes. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a little bit of a play on words. my music is often generated by rhythmic ideas, and I love walking. And when I moved back to the city after being gone for a while, my first gravitated towards San Bruno Mountain, and there's a wonderful loop. And I was writing in my head while walking around, and I noticed the different paces of my step. And so as I was thinking of ideas, and I had an intention to compose this piece for specific instruments that were actually with the San Francisco Composers Orchestra, I just started hearing different patterns among the different gaits that I was striding with, or the gaits I was keeping with my feet. And I often get ideas that way. So originally it was called San Bruno Mountain, and I think that's a better name for the mountain, and gait change is a better name for the piece.
So. Oh, nice. Very nice. So how is it orchestrated?
Originally it was orchestrated for single winds, a flute, oboe, clarinet, bass clarinet, bassoon, single trumpet and horn, and trombone, and then strings, percussion, and piano. And the piano part was important to me because I was working closely with a dear friend and mentor, Alan Crossman, who's a wonderful pianist and composer, and I wanted to write this piece especially for him to feature the piano and an interlude in the middle. So the whole interlude came in that process. And then when we decided to do it for Oakland, and this is often the case, I'm a lucky person because I have groups that, because I conduct, I think, I get to bring my pieces to them. When I took it to Oakland, I wanted to expand the voices available, because I had so many more voices available to me in a 50-piece orchestra than in composer's orchestra, which is one on a part. I decided to reorchestrate it. So what you'll hear Sunday is a new orchestration that adds a second horn, adds a second trumpet. What else? Adds a tuba.
Great. And the piece is how long about?
It's about 13 minutes. Yes.
Nice. Well, we unfortunately don't have an excerpt of gait changes.
No, we don't.
But we do have another snippet of your writing. Tell us what the story is behind Cowgirl
Rondo.
Rondo.
Well, that's a really fun little piece. I was received a commission from the Community Women's Orchestra several years ago for their 25th anniversary, and it was to write a suite. And I wrote a suite for the young of all ages. And so I was out staying in the country in a friend of mine's house for a week, finishing up some movements and trying to start another one. And the neighbors were these girls that rode by on horses every day. And I was composing, and they were just trotting along, and it was so cute that it just became an inspiration for me. So this is Cowgirl Rondo. It's just a depiction of the character of a cowgirl's riding horse.
Another taste of Martha Stoddard, then more talking with her and with Jason Austinstead about the Oakland Civic Orchestra's concert. Cowgirl Rondo by my guest Martha Stoddard, the San Francisco Composers Chamber Orchestra performing there. And that's a lot of fun. Thank you for that.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it always.
Well, back to this concert on this coming Sunday at 4 o'clock, Lake Merritt United Methodist Church on Lakeshore Ave, subtitled On American Soil. So let's talk about that theme. Jason, maybe you can share with us other works on the program and how it's being tied together.
Well, yeah, thank you. The other works on the program are the Ninth Symphony of Antonin Dvorak and Barber's first essay for orchestra, as well as Gait Changes. And this concert came about as sort of combining two concerts, really. We usually do another concert, four concerts per year, so there's another one after this, except this year, as we did last year, we are teaming up with Laney College and their choir to do a choral concert. So this concert sort of is a combination of two concerts. We wanted to put the Dvorak Ninth Symphony on the last concert, so we brought that in here and tried to find pieces that would complement sort of an American music theme.
Well, it's interesting. The community orchestras here in the Bay Area seem to get, I don't want to say stuck, but the programming often coincides. Like it's a big Dvorak year, and even though it's not calendrically. The Bay Area Rainbow Symphony just did the 7th. Yeah. Now you're doing the 9th. It's
and
funny.
And we don't talk to each other either. It just sort of happens.
It does. It just kind of happen. And our last concert was all Sibelius.
Right.
Too. So that was
so. Jason,
fun.
When did you first get involved with the Oakland Civic Orchestra?
Oh gosh, it's
this
been.
This is your fourth season.
This is my fourth season. So after I graduated with my undergrad, I spent a year in St. Louis, freelancing, being a pianist, and then learning about conducting. And I started getting more into it, and found through a friend actually. Right.
Nat Berman, who was a former assistant conductor, mm-hmm. led us to Jason. So
oh, great, great.
And I've been out here ever since.
It sounds like Martha's giving you a bit of a hand in helping program as well, if that sounds good.
Yes, and I've really been enjoying that. And she likes to foster this collaborative mm-hmm. environment, which has been really fun to work in.
Obviously, the Barber essay, it must be something you've known from working as a musician,
oh,
as well. Now learning it as a conductor, what are you noticing in the score that you're bringing out that maybe hasn't come to the ear when you were first maybe performing it?
It's interesting. I was having a conversation with one of the cellists in our orchestra a couple of rehearsals ago, and we were talking about phrase lengths. You know, standard musician break time talk. And I couldn't help but show him my score, which has been all marked up with all of the phrases. And an interesting thing about this piece that maybe is a little bit more challenging to comprehend with the ear is these overlapping phrases. So mm-hmm. it'll have phrases of different lengths and strung together, but overlapping with other phrases of other lengths.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings, it allows for a really, really rich aural experience.
Well, nice having you on the air on the day after Samuel Barber's birthday.
Right. Happy belated.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Little we did celebrate last night in your
house. Oh, yes.
Oh, good. Good for you. Good for you.
By playing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a member of a couple of community orchestras on this side of the Bay myself, the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony I mentioned, and as well as the Peninsula Symphony down in the Peninsula, I think that the state of amateur music making, and I say that in the best sense of the word from the Latin to love, is in great shape.
I think so, too. It's encouraging to me. In the recent years, and I don't know if just the accessibility of information has grown. I've had this orchestra since 1997. There is a tremendous surge of energy of all ages of people wanting to get involved and play, and we've really had a great time with new players in the last 5 years. It's just picked up a lot of steam. It's, you know, I don't know what to tell people. There's more people that want to play than actually can fit in the room. So
fantastic. And
really
it's great
wonderful.
That the city of Oakland is supporting it as well.
It is great. You know,
to a certain degree, I'm sure.
Yes. And actually in 1997, when I took the job, there was this like hint of, well, we're not sure how long this is going to last. And that's been 19 years and it's going stronger than ever. And, you know, during the recession, there were a few conversations I had with the person that I work with in the city, and she said, well, we're not going to let this go. This is too important. And so that has made me really happy. The city has really supported us and given us a lot of freedom to do what we do.
Martha Stoddard's Gate Changes is on the program this Sunday, Samuel Barber's first essay for orchestra. And just share with me a couple of anecdotes regarding Dvorak and his 9th symphony. Yeah, we were off mic, we were talking about some misconceptions of the piece.
Well, right. I mean, I think, you know, when you think the New World and there's this sort of sense out there that perhaps he just came and started writing, implanting Negro spirituals from the time. That's how he thought it. He was certainly exposed to the music that was vibrantly alive in America, and spirituals were part of that. He also toured around and was acquainted with some Native American music, but he never really appropriated anything. Today, we're very aware of cultural appropriation being something we don't want to have happening. I would say if he had not, as he did an afterthought, entitled The New World, The New World, nobody would have occurred to him that it was particularly American. I mean, the pentatonic themes that are built in could have just as easily been from his Czech origins. They're just folk patterns that are infused with the rhythms of the Czech language that are probably interchangeable with the rhythms that he experienced and heard in the different environments that he traveled about in the U.S.
But as you know, Martha, it's all about marketing, marketing, marketing. So From the New World sells a lot more seats than Symphony No. 9.
Right, yes. And, you know, if you go back to the confusions of numberings in Dvorak,
you can be
utterly confused for a lifetime. But you say the New World, everybody knows what you're talking
about. Let's save that for another show.
Yes.
Martha Stoddard, thanks for coming in. Jason Ossenstedt, have a great concert on Sunday at the Lake Merritt United Methodist Church, 1330 Lakeshore Avenue. It's the Oakland Civic Orchestra this Saturday. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's some Dvorak from his From the New World Symphony, the Scherzo. Beautiful second theme of the Scherzo, Dvorak's From the New World, and a beautiful flute melody. Once again, the Oakland Civic Orchestra performing that work, as well as music of Samuel Barber and Martha Stoddard. This Sunday, a free concert, 4 p.m., Lake Merritt United Methodist Church. Still to come, we'll have a bit of a cabaret discussing the production of said musical up at the School of the Arts here in San Francisco. And Peter Robinson will be by to discuss Downton Abbey and its demise and offer us a few other cultural diversions. Well, football and dance collide in the West Coast premiere of Colossal by Andrew Hinderaker, directed by John Tracy at the San Francisco Playhouse. It opens next week and runs through the 30th of April. My guest is the actor playing the lead character, Mike Jason Stojanovski, someone who is no stranger to dealing with disability, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in our conversation. Jason is an Australian-born actor currently based in Los Angeles. He's worked in film and TV, both here in the States as well as prominently in Australia. He's also a cerebral palsy advocate and speaks fluent Macedonian. Jason, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you for having me.
Why on earth Macedonian?
That's just where my parents were born.
Okay, there we go.
Grew up speaking it. My grandparents don't speak English, so it was one of those things where it was just a necessity to learn.
And they're in Australia?
They all are, yes.
They all are, yeah. So you still have an opportunity to speak Macedonian?
Yeah, I mean, they still don't. I mean, they speak enough English to be able to get by, you know, day-to-day life, but it's easier for them to speak Macedonian. So out of respect, you know, all the grandkids and, you know, my parents, even we all speak Macedonian to them, so.
Well, I could listen to you all day just read the phone book with that lovely accent of yours.
Thank you.
You're from New South Wales. Now, is it a challenge to cover up the Aussie accent, or are you fairly neutral in your voice and naturally?
I think I'm more neutral than, you know, a lot of Australians that I come across. I do hear people tell me a lot that I, you know, do have quite a neutral accent. So it's not as difficult to cover up the Australian when I'm doing work here in the States. You know, I think it's one of those things where even in Australia, we're surrounded by, you know, US pop culture all the time, film, television, music. So, you know, if you sing along to your favorite song in the car, you're doing the accent, right? So it's kind of one of those things that starts from there, and then you just need to develop an ear and catch yourself when you're doing things wrong and, you know, go from there.
And so the American accent comes, you know, it takes some practice. But
it does,
comes
of
along.
Course, it takes practice.
And
yeah.
I'm curious, as an Australian, is there an American accent, whereas in America we think of the folks in New England, and then we think of the folks down south. And
I mean, there's so many. generally speaking, they will say, you know, a general American accent, meaning sort of more West Coast, but without the specificity of, you know, the slang and all that. So you just, you know, you do a very general American accent, as they say.
Mm-hmm. As an Australian, do you hear different, obviously there must be different accents within Australia and New Zealand for that.
Yeah,
matter,
I mean, look, there's different accents from city to city even, but it's one of those things where a lot of people don't pick it up unless, you know, you're from there and you go, okay, I hear that. Mm-hmm. I know that we say that or we do this, or yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't give the plot much time in the introduction, so mm-hmm. how familiar were you with American football before becoming involved in Colossal?
I wasn't.
But you're acting.
You know, I mean, I've played video games. That's about as far as I got with the NFL. But, I mean, because football to me is soccer.
Right, of course.
You know, when you say football, that's what
I think.
As it is
to 90% of the world.
So, yeah, no, it was one of the, I mean, it's a great game. It's a beautiful, beautiful sport to watch. But I wasn't all too familiar with it until after I, you know, decided that I needed to be.
Well, I mentioned I didn't give the plot Colossal justice in our introduction. Could you share with us a synopsis of the play?
Absolutely. I mean, it follows Mike, who I play, who was a football star in college who was injured in a bad tackle, suffered a spinal injury. So the story follows him throughout his, I guess, recovery, but we do take, you know, we delve into his past and we talk about sacrifice and it's the play's basically about strength, you know, and where we find strength and what we do to, you know, achieve just being whole. Because, I mean, there's many layers to the play. There's many reasons why, you know, all the characters throughout need strength and find strength in many ways that they do that. So it's We discuss strength and we discuss, as I said, sacrifice. And it's tough to explain because, as I said, there's just so many layers to it because we're discussing, you know, the injury itself. We're discussing the game. We're discussing relationships with, you know, father and son. We're discussing parts of sexuality. You know, there's some beautiful things to it. So it's, you know, there's something for everybody in there.
Well, I think it was mentioned that the playwright wrote this well before all of this the news about sports injuries were as prominent as it was, well before Michael Sam came out as a gay footballer.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing amalgamation.
Yeah, it
coming
came
in.
Together right at the right time.
Perfect,
perfect
timing,
for
yeah.
us.
Yeah. So the production itself is designed as a football game. What will people see?
They're going to see a football field, and it's amazing because I just saw it for myself for the first time yesterday. We've been rehearsing in Oakland for the past couple of weeks, so this is the first time we bumped into the theater yesterday, and it was kind of we all walked in, the whole team, and just went, wow, you know, this is really coming together, and it's something that we're all really excited about. But without giving too much away, I think I'm going to say, because it's something that I've described when I'm talking to people that are going to come see the show, like friends and family, I've said, just be ready for an event. You know, it's not like anything that you've seen before in the theater or anything you'd be used to seeing in the theater. You know, I mean, as we've mentioned, there's elements of dance, there's elements of music, there's, you know, acting and all that good stuff.
Well, how is director John Tracy tying in modern dance to all this?
I don't know if I should spoil that for anybody.
Some of
to
it's
be
in
honest.
The press release.
There's just, I mean, we've got dance routines and musical numbers that accentuate the acting scenes throughout. So they're there as a support mechanism for us on stage, you know, during our scenes. So you might see things happening behind us as we're going, or you might see things happening throughout the scenes in order to accentuate a certain point or the meaning of a scene or, you know, things like that.
Well, I also understand that there's going to be a countdown clock for each of the quarters of the show.
We're still working through that. But
and it's worked out so the four quarters of the play are actually the four acts. And
exactly.
Replete
yes.
with halftime
yes.
show.
So you're going to come in as an audience member and you're going to watch a game.
Fantastic. And what has John brought to the production that lifted it from the written word to something dramatic?
When I first read this script, I looked at it and genuinely my first instinct was just to say, I do not know how we're going to lift this off the page. And because, as I said, there's so many elements to it. And as it's written, you're looking at it going, okay, I can imagine this if it were a film, but on stage, how do we do this? And I found myself during the first week of rehearsals, by the end of the first week, I just looked at it and went, we've got a show. John Tracy is a maniac. He's amazing. I mean, his ability to bring us all together as a team, and, you know, we're working so efficiently and we're doing things that he's got a great vision, things that I read on the paper, and you know, when he's talked about them and when he's brought them to life, I just went, wow, I didn't even see it from that direction. I don't know how we come up with it, but it's amazing.
Mm, John's been a guest on several occasions here on Open Air. Hear that, John? Hire Jason again. He loves you. He loves you. So, Jason, home now is L.A.,
mm-hmm.
But have you relocated up here for the duration of the play? Are you going some back and forth?
No, what's I've relocated on? Up here for the duration of the play. I mean, with the schedule being how it is, rehearsal schedule and then the run schedule, it'd be too much to go back and
forth. Any chance of your falling in love with the Bay Area?
I fell in love with the Bay Area the moment I drove over the Bay Bridge when I got here. I was spoiled. It was a beautiful day, so I drove over and it was just like, wow, what a sight.
What else have you been doing here in San Francisco?
I wish I could say that I've been doing some touristy things, but I haven't had a chance to go out and see anything, really.
Do you have to go right back down to L.A. after the show, or are you going to spend a little bit of
no,
time
I have
to,
I have to go right back down, unfortunately. But I do want to see Alcatraz before I go.
You'll get there, as long as they let you back off.
Yeah.
So what is your impression? How long have you been in L.A.?
I've been here almost 6 years now.
Wow. What's your impression of the L.A. acting scene?
By comparison to Australia, it's a whirlwind. There's just so much opportunity for work. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, everybody says it's the place to be if you want to be in the industry, right? But you don't quite understand what that means until you're actually there.
Are you open to everything and anything that comes your way, or trying to be selective and focused on a particular genre?
I'm always open to anything and everything, obviously, but, you know, being selective just comes down to the individual project, not necessarily a genre or anything like that. You know, work is what work is, and if it's something that inspires me, I'll do it. Doesn't matter what, you know, medium or what genre, or, you know.
Happy being a working actor.
Absolutely,
is,
yeah.
Which is the
you will hear no complaints from
which is the challenge of all. Now, this is always a question that is fraught for actors. What's next?
I don't know right now, to be honest. I wish I did.
Well,
but I don't know.
Well, I think we should have some potential casting agents come see Colossal at this SF Playhouse.
I think we should. But you know what? I mean, those sort of things, worrying about what happens next doesn't really concern me right now. I mean, I'm focused completely on the show as it should be.
Have to be,
know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Your work as a cerebral palsy advocate isn't just a matter of supporting a charity that sounds interesting and wanting to do good. It comes from some very personal experience. I wonder if you could share that with us.
I actually was born with cerebral palsy. It's a very mild form. Luckily for me, I mean, people just think that I've sprained my ankle when I walk down the street. But I have had corrective surgery and all that. I've gone through, you know, a number of surgeries and, you know, gone through some tough times, and the Cerebral Palsy Association in Australia was always there, you know, helping me and my family with anything and everything that we needed. So I felt it was my responsibility when I came of age, in a sense, to, you know, give back. And it's something that I've really enjoyed doing, and it's been quite fulfilling.
And you're able to do that in LA as well?
You know what? Bits and pieces, yes, but not quite to the extent yet as I have in Australia. I would like to, but it just hasn't come about yet.
Well, Jason, let's stay in touch, and I wish you a spectacular run of Colossal. Again, some details here. The West Coast premiere. Oh, I should mention also regarding the West Coast premiere that Colossal is receiving a National New Play Network rolling world premiere this season, with productions at the Olney Theater Center, Mixed Blood Theater, the Dallas Theater Center, and Southern Rep. And a bit of PR about the rolling premiere. The St. Paul Pioneer Press said, "There's a distinct possibility that Colossal packs more issues and action into its 65 minutes or so than any other piece of theater you'll see this season. Breathtaking, audacious in its ambition, percussive and high-flying in its execution, galvanizing in its effect." Jason, have a great run.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Colossal runs opens next week and runs through April 30th. Information at sfplayhouse.org. Still to come, Peter Robinson will be reflecting on the end of the Downton Abbey series and offer a few cultural diversions. And we're going to divert to the last days of the Weimar Republic next with my next guests. Thank you.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome. Fremde, étranger, stranger. Glücklich zu sehen, je suis enchanté. Happy to see you, bleibe, reste, stay. Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome. Im Kabarett, oh Kabarett, du Kabarett. Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies and Gentlemen, guten Abend, bonsoir, good evening. Wie geht's? Comment ça va? Do you feel good? Ich bin euer Conferencier. Je suis votre compère. I am your host und sage willkommen, bienvenue, welcome. Im Kabarett, oh Kabarett, du Kabarett. Leave your troubles outside. So, life is disappointing, forget it. In here, life is beautiful. The girls are beautiful. Even the orchestra is beautiful.
The unmistakable sound of Cabaret and Willkommen from Cantor and Ebb's Cabaret. Here in San Francisco, we're really fortunate to have a number of extremely talented men and women leading our public schools as principals and teachers. The Ruth Asawa School of the Arts doubles down in the talent department in the person of Principal Brian Kern. In addition to being a respected administrator, he's a university-trained conductor and music director and will lead the School of the Arts production of Cantor and Ebb's Cabaret, which opens tomorrow with performances through the 20th. He was to be in studio, but his principal duties pulled him away at the last minute. But we are joined by two of the principals of the production of Cabaret, Lucy Murphy, who is an aspiring nurse, currently a junior in the musical theater department at SOTA, who appeared in the productions of The Music Man and Spamalot. She'll be playing Sally Bowles. Welcome, Lucy.
Hi.
And in the role, one of the roles in Cabaret that is inextricably linked and important, later created in Broadway by such amazing actors, Ryan Doyle will be playing the role of Cliff. At the ripe old age of 17, Ryan is a singer, songwriter, actor, and cabaret artiste who has already released his first album of entirely original material, Right By My Side, recently made a solo debut at the Society Cabaret in San Francisco's Union Square District. Welcome to you, Ryan.
Hi, thank you.
Busy guy at age 70. That's pretty amazing. Well, this production of Cabaret must be at once entertaining and educational.
Yeah, that's completely true.
So what did you learn about the setting of Cabaret?
Well, the setting of Cabaret is it's a really interesting topic of the show because you see all these different productions of the show and so many people are familiar with the movie version that there is a certain darkness of the era that is overlooked a lot of the time. And we're doing the 1998 revival version, which really highlights the darkness of the era, which has, I don't know about you, but it's taught me a lot about kind of the different politics of what was going on.
Right. It's more than you'll get it from the history books.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a history lesson and an arts lesson.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, tell me more about your role of Cliff and what he's doing in the show.
Yeah, my character Cliff is a writer from Pennsylvania, and he's traveling through Europe. We see him as he's in Berlin during the 1930s, and it's kind of the show is through his eyes, and he's going there for inspiration for his novel. So he's looking at all these people as characters for his book, and you know, sometimes you get an inside look of what he sees, and it's great to play this role because I'm looking at all the characters through that eye too to try and get into the character. So it's been amazing. It's been awesome.
Based on the real life of the author Christopher Isherwood. right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I Am a Camera for his time in Berlin as a writer.
Yeah.
Trying to become a young writer.
Yes.
So this musical touches on some very adult themes. So is any of the risque material kind of washed over at all? It's set in the Kit Kat Club for the most part, after all of these being handled with kid gloves, so to speak. Pardon the pun?
Not at all.
No.
Definitely an important part of this production has been making sure that our parents are very open-minded about the production.
Did they have to sign off on all this?
Yeah. But we don't really skip over any of the adult themes. When we started the production, our director, Ron McCann, told us that a lot of websites have said don't do cabaret if you're in high school because they often skip over the sexuality of the show and the adult themes of the show. But he didn't want to do that that kind of a production. He wanted to keep it true to the writing.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned that it also serves as an educational theme about a very specific time of the world, mm-hmm. and how that very much changed in the weeks and months after the setting of Cabaret. Let's back up a little bit and talk about the School of the Arts itself. What brought both of you to the School of the Arts?
Well, I came from a Catholic school here in the city. I went to St. Cecilia's School. And we had a drama club there that you could join once you were in the fourth grade. And that was where I did my first work in musical theater. I started performing in the productions there in the fifth grade, doing Once on This Island and Annie and Alice in Wonderland. But I also did a lot of training at ACT's Youth Conservatory and at the Young Actors Theater Camp. So I always had kind of a love for dressing up and playing around as a kid, and I got into the theater because I knew it was a chance for me to wear a costume when it wasn't Halloween. So that's kind of what drew me to the School of the Arts.
That's Lucy Murphy starring as Sally Bowles in Cabaret. How about you, Ryan Doyle? How did you come to SOTA?
Well, I remember I think it was second grade. I saw SOTA's production of Beauty and the Beast. And I knew from that moment after seeing the show that that's the only school I wanted to go to. So
you wanted to be a cheese grater from then on out.
I was a cheese grater. Fifth grade, I was a cheese grater in Beauty and the Beast. my favorite role to date. I started doing performances and musicals, and then by the time eighth grade come, I auditioned for SOTA, and when I got in, it was like if my dream had been fulfilled since second grade. So,
well, that's fantastic. That's Ryan Doyle playing the lead Cliff in Cabaret. Talk to me about that audition process. You have to audition to get accepted into SOTA.
Yes.
Yeah, the audition process is kind of the bulk of the application for SOTA. For both of us, we auditioned for musical theater, where you have to sing two songs and a monologue. And there, you don't sing a monologue. And then there's a dance portion. So it's a pretty, I think it was about 3 hours when we did it.
Yeah, it was a long day.
Yeah, but it was a great experience. And it's a lengthy audition process, for sure. Yeah.
What is added to the curriculum mix at the School of the Arts that focuses on the performing? And I imagine visual arts as well.
Yeah, well, we have a really kind of interesting block schedule at the school, where we do about 3 academic classes a day, but we have 5 in total, so we cycle through them during the week. And then after lunch, we go into our art disciplines. So for musical theater, we start with choir, and then we go to our musical theater classes, which can be anything from audition technique to different types of dance. We have, I think, 4 types of dance that we do in the department during the week. But we usually we're there doing our arts for at least 4 hours a day. If we're in the musical, that's more like 7 or 8
yeah.
right now, at least. But it's a very demanding it's a very demanding school, but it also really kind of fosters our skills in the arts.
And the annual musical is kind of a big deal, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So when did the casting process start for this particular musical?
Back in October.
Yeah, pretty much at the beginning of the school year it started.
Yeah.
And the audition process for this particular show was about a week long.
Yeah.
It was really detailed and extensive this year. But yeah, that was like 7 months ago now, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Nice. And what's the rehearsal process like? Is it's a part of the school day and the arts portion of the school, or is it extracurricular? Or?
It's extracurricular. Basically, musical theater goes till 4:30, so rehearsals would start at 4:30, and at the beginning they would go till 6:30, and then as we've been getting closer and closer to the show, they've been going till 7:30, and then 8, and now we get out around 9 o'clock at night from our rehearsals.
And then
yeah.
Start it all over again the next day.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Now, other school departments must be involved in such a large production as well.
Yeah, we are an orchestra department. They're the orchestra for the show, so it is a really collaborative process, and the show is like kind of produced and run by the technical theater department. To do all the sets and the sound and the lights, and they are incredible. It's crazy how talented they are. So it definitely combines a lot of departments, and any student for any discipline can audition for the musical. So I mean, a lot of us are in musical theater, but you know, there's theater kids, and really, if you have interest in musical theater, no matter what discipline you're in, you can audition for it.
Yeah, we've had creative writing students in the show. We've had theater kids, classical vocal kids. We have a girl in world music this year in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a wild ride, and everybody's allowed to be part of it, so we all really get to know each other.
Lucy, your bio mentions that you're an aspiring nurse. Is
yes.
the performing arts going to be always a part of your life? Do you want to emphasize that or keep it as in tandem with everything else you plan to do?
I'm still thinking about it. It's one of those things where it's been part of my life for so long that, and I love it so much that I don't know how I'm going to continue to incorporate it when continuing to pursue my education outside of the arts. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Okay. We're going to find out.
You've got some time. Yeah. Ryan, how about you?
I'm still kind of at that point where I'm not sure if I want to focus on my musical theater or, you know, just singing. I really like singing and songwriting too. So, I mean, in an ideal world, I'd love to do all of it in the future. But I think no matter what I decide to do, musical theater will always, like, be a huge part of my life. And it's a huge stepping stone no matter what you do, I think. It just it helps you build so many skills no matter what you decide to do in the future. So.
Well, it sounds like you're getting a great start at the San Francisco Unified School District School of the Arts, yes. Ruth Asawa School for the Arts. Have a great production of Cabaret. Hope to catch one of the productions. And thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you
so much for having us.
Sure. The production of Cantor and Ebb's Cabaret opens tomorrow with performances through the 20th. Information at the school district's website, no doubt, and the SOTA website as well. Cantor and Ebb's Cabaret with thanks to Lucy Murphy playing Sally Bowles and Ryan Doyle as Cliff.
Happy to see you. Blimey, let's to stay.
Here's Arnie. Hip hop and Kevin. Welcome. Fendon. Etrogé. Satan. Lepish. Susan. Je suis enchanté. Happy to see.
Some accurate information regarding the website, sfsota.org/cabaret.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you,
come fly with me on open air. Well, what's the connection, you may ask? Well, here to explain that connection is none other than our regular contributor, Peter Robinson. Peter, why that tune today?
Hi, David. Good to be here. Well, I discovered serendipitously the Aviation Museum at San Francisco Airport. The actual name to it is the Louis A. Turpin Aviation Museum. And although it's been open since the year 2000, believe it or not, I've never been there before. Serendipitously, I was there for an event, the launch of Fiji Airlines, which in June are now going to be flying nonstop direct to Fiji. But they had an event, and the place and the location was the Aviation Museum. And this is in the International Center. It is well worth a 20 or 30 minute stroll around some of the exhibits. It's before you go security check-in, so you want to arrive half an hour early if you want to see it. And the current show is called Catch Our Style, California Regional Airlines from 1950s to 1980s. And this is really an interesting exploration of literally California style, high fashion, the type of planes that were flying, for example, the Pacific Southwest Boeing 727. And, of course, there are the outfits and the uniforms from a distant era, which doesn't seem so far away. But when you look at the styles and you look at the seating on those planes, it makes you realize. They even use the word air hostess uniform. And, of course, air host today is politically incorrect. Before that, they were called trolley dollies, and that got even more trouble on the air. So if you enjoy flying, you're interested in the history of aviation, certainly spend time and make a few minutes extra before you take off from the International Center at San Francisco International Center Airport, and you'll enjoy a brief and introductory history to the whole of aviation. Now, today I've just come from the Legion of Honor, and I highly recommend it. It opens tomorrow. It is the Oscar de la Renta fashion display. And I think this is a great piece of fashion education from the 1970s down to today. Many of those costumes that you see on the red carpet, many of the celebrities from Barbara Walters to Oprah were these. And, of course, there are presidential candidates. Laura Bush was one of his clients. And in this current show, there is a beautiful ballroom gown worn by Hillary Clinton on a trip to India. Now, it's well worth picking up the catalogue, since the fashion historian and writer Molly Sorkin has put together an excellent introduction. The exhibition is running at the Legion of Honour. It's easy parking on a rainy day. You float in underneath, you arrive dry, and then there you are in a world of ball gowns, casual, elegant, magnificent, dresses you may have seen, gowns you may recognise, and of course, a complete history of the fashion industry. And now a little music for something totally different. But here we go. And tell me, do you recognize the tune?
I can name that tune in three accents.
Three accents. Well, let's kick off with a British one to start with. And so we say a fond farewell to Downton Abbey. Indeed, this was the last of the series, which I think has not only engaged this country, but engaged the world. And a very fitting end to the series, I might add. Julian Fellowes wanted to be sure we gave this up and down, upstairs, downstairs, in and out the bedrooms, in and out the kitchen, and above all, in and out the great house of Downton Abbey. He wanted to make sure that he gave it a happy ending. And when I think about the characters that have dominated our lives over certainly the last 3 years, I've had friends who are actually suffering from Downton Abbey withdrawal syndromes. Because I think one of the great tricks of his writing is to engage you in the family life of the Crawley family, to engage you both upstairs and downstairs, and then to finish each episode with a meaningful question. Will Lady Edith get married? Will Lady Mary finally change her persona? And then, of course, the great role played by Maggie Smith, the Dowager, who has some of the best lines in the series. Now, I think what I'd most like to congratulate Julian Fellowes on is the historical accuracy, because this series has been all about change. It starts with the twilight of the Empire, with the Edwardian period, and then moves into the First World War, with dramatic scenes when the Great House is turned into a hospital for wounded heroes coming home, and then finally moves into the 1920s with the Roaring Twenties, the introduction of the telephone, introduction of the radio, and even in the kitchen, the introduction of electronic cooking, such as cake mixers. So I think you've got historical accuracy. You've also got some great costumes, and I think the way they've designed the sets and also placed it in this beautiful country house, which again is a period piece, you begin to see that a soap opera can have a meaning in our lives in the 21st century. It's a reflection on change, it's a reflection on time, and certainly one thing I enjoyed was the fact that people speak slowly, and they enunciate, they pronunciate, and they make statements. Statements can come from upstairs, but also statements from the kitchen. You know, the butler, he plays a key part as holding the whole household together. And Barrow, who is the outsider, he ends on a very happy note. He gets promoted to finally become a butler. So if you're looking for the story of family life, you're looking for a story of human relations, how people get along, and if you're looking above all for a deep, meaningful sense of history, then Downton Abbey is probably well worth getting as a DVD set, and I highly recommend it. And to finish with this week, I just want to reflect on an upcoming show at the Sausalito Library. It is called David Lean Revisited, and it is looking at some of the great movies in one evening that Lean made: Passage to India, Bridge Over the River Kwai, Rhine's Daughter, and of course Dr. Zhivago and Lawrence from Arabia. For more information on that, call 415-381-6671, David Lean Revisited, at Sausalito Library on March the 24th.
Thank you, Peter. We'll look forward to your next update here on Open Air.
Good to be here, David. Thank you.
Well, backing up just a bit to the production of Cabaret, I mentioned that my guest Ryan Doyle is in the role of Cliff, and that he had brought that he had just released a CD. I didn't realize he had brought it with him. So we're going to hear a cut from Ryan Doyle's solo CD, Right By My Side. He's starring as Cliff in the School of the Arts production of Cabaret. Here he is singing Superhero. Thank you.
are tired of being pushed to the ground. And there's no one there to even know you're making a sound. But I'll be here by your side.
Young and talented Ryan Doyle, who will be starring in the production of Cabaret at the School of the Arts. He's got the role of Cliff. He was my guest earlier today. Lucy Murphy starring as Sally Bowles. Best of luck for both of them in this production of Cabaret. Productions through next weekend. Information at sfsota.org. Well, that's open air for this week, 10th of March, 2016. Join me next week. Among my guests will be the San Francisco Ballet conductor Martin West. Martin West, who is currently conducting the wonderful Coppelia by Delibes. On the 25th of this month, the full orchestra will be featured, sans dancers, in a special orchestral concert featuring the orchestra. Also, Brendan Guy of the chamber group Curious Flights will be here with their guest composer from England, Simon Dobson. Open-air shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. If you've got a show segment suggestion, by all means, drop me an email, david@kalw.org. The show is produced by Niels Swinkels. And a reminder that our shows are archived at kalw.org. Thanks for listening.